5th, 2002. I guess we're in Keene, right? Keene, California.
Keene, California. Keene, California.
What is your complete name?
Ricardo Estrada Chavez.
Okay. And what is the date of your birth?
I was born November 12th in 1929.
Okay. And where were you born?
In Yuma, Arizona.
Okay. Your mother's complete name?
Juana Estrada.
Okay. And your father's complete name?
Librado Hernandez Chavez.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about them. Let's start, say, with your mother's family. What? Where was she born?
My mother was born in Chihuahua. They used to tell us it was a place close to the city, to Chihuahua, ¿verdad? She was 6 months old when they came, when they brought her to this country. So she doesn't remember anything. She grew up here.
In the Yuma area?
They first came to, it seems like everybody came first to El Paso, you know. They would stay there in El Paso and look around, see where they were going to go. And they went to New Mexico. There were some miners, I guess, that they used to do mine work, their family. They went to New Mexico, and different parts. They lived in Deming and Santa Rita and other places that Las Cruces, she mentions, and they used to mention. And then they moved to Yuma. In later years, they came to Arizona.
So your grandfather was a miner in Chihuahua? What was he doing before he came here? He went into the mines here.
We're talking about my mother's side.
Your mother's side, yeah.
No, my grandfather died when my mother was a little baby girl.
Okay.
Of course, my grandmother married again to, you know, Doroteo, somebody that she loved very much. Well, yeah. Raised her, you know, so
right.
that's the one she used to call father.
Okay.
And he was a miner. He was, they used to be working in the mines. And,
What was his complete name, Doroteo?
Él era Doroteo Tovar.
Tovar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And she met him in Chihuahua before they immigrated, your grandmother then?
I'm not sure of that. I think it was probably, they were probably already here.
Okay.
Because I said my mother was 6 months old when they came across.
Right.
And I don't think he was in the family yet.
Okay.
They might have met in El Paso, New Mexico, someplace.
Okay.
I'm not sure of that part, really.
Right.
You know.
Okay. That's not the kind of thing they talk with little kids, right?
No, they didn't. I know a little bit more about, when we get to our father's family, I know a little more about
right.
them than my mother's was kind of vague, you know.
Okay.
We didn't know too much about it.
Okay. Well, then let's talk some about your father's family. Where was he born? What, you know?
And they were also from Chihuahua.
Okay.
But my dad was a little older when they came to this country. He was about 4 years old. And they come from a place that used to be called Hacienda del Carmen. Del Carmen?
Mm-hmm.
Which is now Flores Magón, you know, and I'll tell you the story later. We'll get to it, why we couldn't find it as Hacienda del Carmen. But that's where they came from. And they also came to El Paso first. I don't know how long they stayed in El Paso, but they stayed there for a while, a little while, not too long, but because my youngest uncle, my father's brother Felipe, was born in El Paso. That's how I was able to find a lot of stuff that we didn't know, you know, because we found his where he was born. We knew that he was born in El Paso, so there were some records there, and we found some. And they stayed there, and then they started moving west. Well, that's west, but they started moving farther west. They came into, they moved to Yuma. They came to Arizona. At first, they came to Gila Bend, Arizona. And they must have stayed there a few years there because I think my grandfather, my dad's father, was working in the railroad. They stayed there for a while. And because my dad used to say he went to school there for a little while. And then later they moved to Yuma, and that's where they settled. They came to the Gila Valley. My grandfather homesteaded a piece of land there, about 80 acres, I think, 40, 80 acres, something like that. A couple of sections out there. And so that's where they were. That's where they made home. They were raised there, and they became men there.
Yeah. So he comes in working with a section? Initially, when they first came into...
I don't know if he worked with the railroad when they were in El Paso and he was transferred or that I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I know that when he was in Gila Bend, he was working for the railroad.
Okay. And then he left the railroad to Homestead.
To Homestead, some right. land here right. and El Gila Valley. And,
okay.
And there in Yuma. That's about 8 miles yeah. from Yuma. It's a little nice valley.
Yeah, okay. So your father then grew up on the homestead, or
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
What were they planting? What were they doing to support themselves on the homestead?
Well, I remember because I was 7 years old when we lost that homestead when we left. When my grandfather was in charge, I don't know what they planted because I wasn't even born then.
Right.
But when my dad was running, he would plant cotton. Alfalfa was big crop was alfalfa.
Yeah.
He used alfalfa for seed, seeded alfalfa,
okay.
the seeds, and cotton, and then he would all kinds of goodies, corn, sweet corn and watermelons and mm-hmm. cantaloupes and squash and chili and yeah. things that for the house,
Right.
But these big crops were the two main. I think where we used to get a little money was the cotton and the alfalfa.
The alfalfa for seed.
That's yeah.
Right.
And also Bermuda grass. Bermuda grass also seeded the Bermuda.
Right.
Bermuda grass, and then they just yeah. let it grow, and then they used the seed for right. they used it for something.
That must have seemed bizarre to be growing Bermuda grass when other people were trying to get rid of it.
Get rid of it. yeah. 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 Well, what they didn't like there around there was a Johnson's grass. Johnson yeah. grass. That was bad stuff. So yeah. they would hate that when yeah. it came. But I still remember a little about the homestead.
Okay.
So I was six, almost 7 years old when we left there.
Yeah. So you have your father's family coming through, working the railroads and homesteading. Your mother's family came through. Moving around, moving west, but basically in mining?
Mining.
Okay.
There was more miners because my uncle, my mother's uncle, mm-hmm. Tio Chico, was also a miner. In fact, he lost an eye in an explosion or something went wrong, and he lost an eye. I remember that because he used to question, what happened to my Tio Chico's eye?
Yeah.
He said, he lost it in a mining accident.
Okay.
So they were miners, yeah.
Right. How many brothers and sisters did your mother have?
My mother had three sisters and one brother, and herself.
Right.
It's five in the family.
And your father's family?
My mother's side, it was my tío Jesús, the oldest. Then my tía María was the second one. Mm-hmm. And then my mother. And then my tía Eligia. And then my tía Francisca, chica.
Okay.
There were five of them.
Five of them.
And on my father's side, there's a whole lot of them. It was a big family. I can remember it was my tía Antonia, tía Camila, my tía Julia, my tía Carmen, my tía Camila, my dad, Librado, Josefa, Felipe, Carmen. I think that was about it,
Okay.
But there was quite a few.
All able to live from what was produced on the homestead at that time, right?
Oh, yes, of course. When they came, and then they started getting married.
Right.
the girls were the oldest were already. In fact, some of them were already married when they came to the homestead.
Okay.
Like my tía Julia is already married. I think she married in Gila Bend, and I was talking about.
Right.
And then others, my tía Carmen probably also married before they came to the homestead, so they already had their home,
Right.
And the others were already old enough to work, like my tío Julio, my dad, my tío Felipe was a baby. I think people worked at pretty young age in those days, but they all worked mm-hmm. around the place.
How much schooling, did your mother have?
None. My mother never went to school.
Okay.
I tell you that she never went to school, but she was a very, very, very smart woman. I don't know if you can how to say that she had a lot of savvy for not going to school.
Right.
She was very, very smart. She had knew a lot of things about life, you know, which was what they used to learn when they didn't go to school, which is more sometimes the books can teach you, you know. Mm-hmm. And so she was a very smart woman that way, you know.
Yeah.
And my dad, he mentioned that he went to school in Hilaven.
Mm-hmm.
He must have gone to the second grade, I guess, or first grade or something like that.
Right.
Just 1 year, 2 years, mm-hmm. the very most.
Yeah.
But he knew how to read and write and all that, you know. In both English and Spanish, my mother didn't. You know.
Now, about what year did they, you know, go to Hilaven, and then approximately when did they go to the homestead?
I am doing this genealogy, and according to that, we're not sure about a lot of the dates because they didn't talk about those things. They never told us that this time we were here, and it's very vague. Just as one, I think they were pretty preoccupied trying to just stay afloat, right. You know, just living, you know, and so dates weren't too, you know, they didn't have too much meaning, I guess. But I think they probably homesteaded in the late 1800s,
okay.
Either 97, 98, maybe 96, maybe.
Okay.
But we can, because some of the my dad's nephews, I remember he told you that some of them were already married, were born right there. You know, they were born right at the homestead when. And it must have been, they were born in 1901, so
okay. They
must have been there a few years already. And that's as close as we can kind of figure out.
Mm-hmm.
Also their ages, we never knew their ages, not even my dad knew exactly what his age was. He knew the date he was born, but he didn't know the year,
he wasn't sure
of the year. But according to, the only thing that we have is my tío Felipe, because we do have papers when he was born.
Yeah.
And then we started, that's giving everybody a year and a half in between, and it kind of works out really neat, you know.
Okay.
So that's how we kind of putting that together. And so, that's the only way we've been able to find out stuff.
Okay. So how did your mother and father meet?
Remember I told you my mother's family were miners.
Right.
Okay. They were working at this. They used to, like, I imagine mines used to, like, I guess they used to work them for a while, and then when they got everything out of it, then they would move to another place. It seems like they ran out of whatever it was, work, you know. Out of the material, the metal they were looking for, whatever, whether gold, silver, or whatever it was. And so they used to be migrant miners, it really amounts to. And now that I know about it, they are at this place called Picacho.
Mm-hmm.
There was it's a mine, Picacho, in California.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother, she's the families knew each other from before, you know.
Right.
They were still little, you know. I think my mother was, she says she was about 8 or 9 when she starts remembering my dad, you know, and he was a little older. But anyway, they were still kids.
Right.
And they kind of grew together. Families would move. And what my grandfather was doing, and my grandfather was like a, actually, basically, he was a contractor, I think that's what he was. He would provide the wood, because they used wood for the boilers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't use coal or anything like that, just wood, you know. There's a lot of wood around. So he and leñeros, they would go, wood choppers, they would go out and chop the wood, and he had cars and people working for him, and they would cart the wood to the mill, and the mills, my other half of my family were working in the mines themselves,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
So they kind of together. And that's where they met, you know, And then later my mother's family moved to Tucson after that, Picacho and all that thing. Then she kind of grew up in Tucson, Arizona. And they didn't meet again until they were already older. And that's when they started, you know, noviando, they started
okay.
boyfriends. And so it's But the families kind of knew each other from way back, you know.
Okay. They were from the Chihuahua area, right?
My mother's family was from Ascension, mm-hmm. Ascension, Chihuahua, Ascension. And my dad's family was from La Hacienda,
El Carmen. You mentioned that they were leñeros. Do you know how they got into getting the leña and, you know, basically making a living by, I guess they were juntando, they were chopping, they were...
Well, no, they were chopping.
They had to go out and gather it. They had to go and gather and deliver it.
Then deliver it, yeah. Right. Yeah, they would have, the mule teams and then they'd go and somebody was all chopping wood all day long, all week. That's a job.
Chop and stack it.
10 hours a day.
Yeah.
And then the cars would go and then they'd load up. Mm-hmm. They hit the loaders that the guys that drove and then they'd bring it back to the mill. And, mm-hmm. and then they'd go back and get another load. And so it's just like a... Yeah, that's what's their job, you know.
Yeah, I'm just wondering how did they get into that line of work?
Because wood fuel was needed, and that was a fuel
was needed, and so they
provided the fuel for the for the boilers.
They met the need.
Mm-hmm, they met the need. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your parents, they had known each other. The families known each other. They met. They married. When was this?
It must have been in 1924. 23 or 1924.
Right.
They were older, you know, when they married. They weren't like 20 or people used to marry very early then.
Right.
No, they were already getting close to their 30s, I think, if not 30 already. You know, my dad was actually over 30, and my mother was right around 30 or 30 something. They married at a mature age. You know.
Okay, mm-hmm. And settled on the homestead.
Actually, when they first got married, they weren't living at the homestead.
No.
One of my uncles didn't want to. He was not a farmer. Said, "Now you come and take it over. I'm leaving.
So
I'm
he took
California.
It over. So what was your father doing then when he wasn't on the homestead? Continue with the previous line of work, or what, you know, when they were the novios, what?
My father was always they were real farmers. That's what they were. He had another parcel, not the homestead, but he bought another parcel right close by it, you know, and he was farming that little parcel.
Okay.
He was also growing cotton and things like that.
Same thing.
And then he had a little, he had a tiendita, a little grocery store. He used to do the mail. He was like the postmaster there. The mail used to come to his store, and then he'd give it to everybody. Everybody came to the store, so they got their mail there.
Yeah.
And they opened a little pool hall with a couple of pool tables. They were the business people there.
Okay.
Yeah. And, they did that. And my tio later, and my oldest uncle.
Okay, so meeting a variety of needs of the people there in the local community.
Exactly. Yeah, I used to provide the kerosene for the lamps. They used to provide the salt, the sugar, milk, whatever. And then the pool hall was recreation. They played cards there, and they had a card table and played pool.
So, how many then are in your family, brothers and sisters?
Us, how many are?
Yeah.
We were six altogether.
Okay.
Elena, the one next to me, my little sister Elena, died as an infant. She was about a year old when she died. But then the survivors were Rita, which is my older sister, and then Cesar was second. Mm-hmm. And then I was next to Cesar. And then Elenita died, was next to me. And then Vicky, Edwiges, my sister Vicky, we call her, is next to me now. And then my youngest brother, which is Librado, we call him Lenny.
Mm-hmm.
He is he's a baby.
Okay. Now, were you all born there in Arizona?
Yes.
Okay.
But then you probably heard the name Manuel. Manuel mm-hmm. Chavez.
Right.
Manuel was like a brother to us because he's actually a cousin, a blood cousin, you know.
Right.
He was my tio Valeriano's son. But his mother died when he was still pretty young, and so he came to live with us. We grew up as, actually we didn't see him as a cousin, we saw him as a brother. Manuel was part of the family too.
Yeah, that's pretty much among many the tradition at that point. That You know, you would help out by, well, as a relative becomes part of the, he is part of the family, but becomes another part of the family, another role.
Yeah, closer. Yeah.
So what are your earliest memories of life on the homestead?
It was a good, we were, I remember since I started remembering probably about, I remember when I was four, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And for 3 years, it seemed like a lifetime, like a long, long time that we were there, you know. Yeah. But it was only 3-4 years, you know, that I can remember. Right. I was there all my life, but I mean, that I can really remember. It was nice. It was nice. It was like this time of the year was especially nice. There was a lot of places to go to explore, to hike, you know. There was mountains like this, maybe not like this, but mountains, you know. Yeah. We would go for walks, and there was a canal, irrigation ditch. It went right in front of our house, like from here to my house. Mm-hmm. There was an irrigation ditch. There was our swimming pool, so summers we stayed all day long in the canal, you know, swimming, you know. Yeah. And we it was a lot of things we did, and we had a lot of fun, you know, with our wagons and BB guns, and we'd go hunting, and there were some very good memories from that time, you know, mm-hmm. when we were little. And and then in 37, 38, we came to California.
Okay. Now, what happened with the homestead?
Actually, what happened, this is during the Depression, you know. Mm-hmm. Things are very, very bad, very, very tight. Actually, a lot of people say that there was a lot of, that some people even went hungry during the Depression because it was, you know, or didn't have enough. I don't remember that. We never did because we lived in the at the homestead, and then my mother had chickens, and we had a milk cow, and we had goats, and so we never, it didn't hit us that hard, you know. Yeah. And my dad would grow corns and beans, and so we had, you know.
There was food.
Food. Yeah. There was eggs, and there was chickens to eat, and there was food, you know. Yeah. So we never remember. Oh, and then the good thing about it is that, you know, I told you that there used to be this irrigation ditch, and I'll go back a little.
Sure. No, that's fine.
I'll go back a little. It was an irrigation ditch that irrigated the land below, you know. Mm-hmm. And there is, I was never able to verify this because there's nothing in writing, but everybody, the old timers always said that my grandfather engineered that ditch, you know. It started as just a little sekia, you know what a sekia is? It's just a little small ditch, you know. Yeah. He went up a few miles up, probably 2.5 miles at the most, I would think, you know. From there used to be a dam, like they had the Rio Colorado, it had a little dam, you know. Uh-huh. And there used to be water that, well, he just kind of went into, there wasn't a big dam, it was a small dam, you know.
Right.
And so he went in and just started bringing this alongside, like the foothill, you know,
right
along. And I guess what he did was just let water run wherever the water he would dig that
the water way. Looks anyway, for its level,
and then the Bureau of Reclamation came later on and did the canal right where he had done it. So he was the first, because he had water from the Tapon for his rent for his little homestead. Uh-huh. But it's got to be at least 2.5 miles that he did that.
Okay.
And then he would just come and open and irrigate his things and come and put the gate back. And it's very, very, very simple, very, what he did. And so later the government came in, and because there were more land started opening up, you know, more homesteads. And they also wanted water. They were farther, and so they did, the Bureau of Reclamation did this bigger canal and followed the same.
Yeah.
Thing, and then made it even a little longer, you know.
Yeah. Was it cement lined or just?
No.
No.
Just
dirt. Dirt. Okay.
Just dirt ditch, you know.
Yeah.
And then when it happened, then because people had to live, once they did that, the family lived right next to the canal because there was a water source.
Right.
Okay. So there was starting like, the homestead was probably the first one, and everybody lived up from there, up north from there. And there would be my dad's place, and my tia Josefa would she never married. She was one of my aunts. They had houses right next to each other. And then it was my tia Carmen and my tia Julia and my tio Julio and my you know, kind of all along the side of the canal, about I would say a quarter of a mile apart or something like that, you know. And so what reminded me then was I told you we had chickens and eggs and right. The times were hard. Yeah. Okay, so since my mother was the one who had a lot of chickens, you know, and they were just there on the farm, so they grew, they multiplied.
Yeah.
Without knowing, cuando menos pensamos, there was a gallina with some pollitos. Oh, look, there's another one. So it just multiplied.
Yeah.
And so we had a lot of eggs. We had to, it was one of our chores. Even before going to school, sometimes we had to go and gather the eggs. We know where the nidos were already.
Right.
And so others go gather the eggs every day. Not unless she was going to. Don't get that chicken, let her just because she's, let her sit on him, you know. And she had more pollitos, so. Anyway, what I was, reminded me, I came back to say that we would exchange, well, they would exchange.
Right.
So he put our basket with, I don't know, 2 or 3 dozen eggs. So take this to your tia Julia. And I get that little basket and walked out to my tia Julia. Here, my mother sent you this. Says, oh, okay. He says, okay. Then she'd give me a cookie or something. Says, wait a minute, amigo, no te vas, don't go. And then she'd get something that she had,
right.
That she had baked bread or whatever. Yeah. Never went home. Then she would just automatically put something in the basket and exchange, you know. And she would say, tell your mama que se me acabó la leche porque vinieron que no sé quién. And so, ahorita, que me mande. Dice mi tía Julia that she wants to need some milk. Take it back. And so they would exchange this sort of thing, you know.
Right.
And so we never, that I can remember, we didn't go hungry. Not us. You know, we're never short of food. We were short of food when we started doing the migrant thing. That was different, you know. Because we didn't have a homestead anymore. Yeah. We couldn't grow our own. But during that period, we had some very good memories and fond memories of, like I say, we would somewhere after school. We would, there was our swimming pool right in front of the house. Yeah. We would swim there all day long, and those things.
Tell us about your mother's day. You know what she did during the day and how she cooked and. You know, did she have a cook stove or something?
Yes. My mother was a wood. She was the. She used to go wood chopping. Also, you know, like she would. You know, she was very good with the axe and you know to cut the wood for the stove. You know, she would go. We had a little red wagon. Says, bring the carrito. We're gonna go get some wood. It's fire, you know, from here, dude. Go out there and get a mesquite and started chopping it. The stove.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody had a wood stove. You know. And she would, my mother was a very, she would do all kinds of goodies. She was a very good cook because she was at some point in her life, remember I told you, she went to Tucson after when she grew up, she became a young lady in Tucson. She started, and she was a maid for some university professor, you know, there at the university.
At the university.
She was a maid, she was a housekeeper, whatever. And they taught her how to cook French and all kinds of good stuff that my mother knew. So we didn't know where, but she learned, you know. So she was very good at pastries, and she did a lot of good stuff that I can still remember, you know.
Yeah.
Like mother, you know, in this case, it was true, you know.
Yes.
she would cook, you know, and washing was a big thing. Washing was a big chore, you know. Because they had to do it, she would boil everything. She'd put the tinas with agua, calentar la agua, and then they should wash it, and then they'd, for some reason they'd boil it, and then they would have to use a bluing, put it in paquesalera blanca, you know.
Yeah.
It was a big thing, you know. I mean, it was a production really to wash, you know. And so we would have to carry the water and fill up the tubs and bring the wood and keep them going so it would boil. And so the day was there was a lot to do, you know. And then she also had her shit with Cesar and I. She would tell us how to do the garden weed, you know, our chilitos and tomates and things that, you know, things that didn't want to bother the big stuff over there. We had our backyard in the garden. See, I still have mine too. I hadn't forgotten. So I mean, I guess you learn that stuff,
right.
And you never give it up, you know.
Yeah.
And so. She would spend time, I guess, there was a lot to do, you know, because there wasn't push a button and you can go do something else, you know. Like I get the machine, fill it up and push a button and then go to town and do something else, come back and it's ready, you know.
Yeah.
In those days it wasn't like that. And we used to have together the I don't know if you guys know about this or not, you know, but the gathering dried cow pies was a big thing, you know. And you might say, well, why would you gather dried cow pies? Because that was one way of fighting the mosquitoes and the things that stung you, the insects, the bugs, you know. You'd light up because they don't flame, they just smoke, you know.
Yeah.
And then you'd put it, like, for instance, right in the wind right now, you'd put one bucket over another over there, and the thing would be burning, and there was no mosquitoes around, you know. Because there was no mosquito control in those days, it'd eat you up alive if you didn't have those kinds of protections, you know. Mm-hmm. You would sit outside in the patio, in the backyard, in the house, and you didn't have to worry about mosquitoes because they were... But if you didn't have those cow pies, then you couldn't stay outside. There's no way you could do it. Mm-hmm. And so they had other uses also for washing, like I said, to boil the tubs, you know. Since we had a lot, there was a lot of cattle around there, you know, a lot of my uncles. So it's just the dry one, it's nice and dry. You spring them and you just light them up. That's what we used to do. And so we had and we had our shore was Cesar and I were the shore was to water the horses, the animals.
Mm-hmm.
We had to water them and feed them, you know, put the hay in the bins and then get them. Take them to the canal to water them and bring them back and move the cow, you know, and she would
stake it down.
Stake it down, yeah. Because cows, because they wander, not like horse as much. So we'd put the stake and take the cow out there. Once she ate everything around her, the chicken, then we'd have to move her. Now move her next, tomorrow you have to move her to another place and bring her in for milking and bring her in the morning to milk and bring her in the evening to milk. And my mother would do the milking. So, I mean, her day was, it was full days, I can remember. So there was no, let me sit back and watch TV, my novella, what's happening? No, I don't think there was any of that. Well, I know there wasn't any of that. You know. It was, people worked more, that's what I'm trying to say. You know. They had to do more physically. You know.
Well, you say there's no TV. What was there for entertainment then, for pasatiempo?
Okay, very good question, you know, this is... for pasatiempo, remember I told you my uncles and nephews and everybody lived along the canal, you know.
Yeah.
Well, it was today is Wednesday. Mm-hmm. It's the Chavez. It's my Libraus turned to entertain us. So everybody would come to Libraus and they build a fire. Build a fire in the middle of the big yard, you know. Build a fire, go get tragan leña pan. Build a fire, you know. And then they would sit around and tell stories, you know. I mean, they would never run out of stories. It's amazing, you know. People talked, you know. People learned. The kids learned because there were so many stories that were told, you know. I know so many things that I still remember because I learned. We could sit there with the grown-ups and listen to everything they were saying, but you couldn't. No, mamás, you know, you open your mouth and that was blasphemy. You couldn't do that. You had to sit there very quietly and just listen to what they were saying. You couldn't be running around in front of, you know, the other, you know. Like today, you're watching TV and your kids are running all over you and jumping and, you know. It was different, I'd say, but it was way different.
No running in asking for snacks in the middle of the store.
None of that stuff. It was different, you know. They were,
like
I said, my mom and dad were older when they got married. They were very mature, so... They knew how to discipline. They were very good. We had a lot of discipline in our house, you know. And others too, you know. My cousins were all the same. We're very well mannered kids, you know. You know, the abuelitos when nobody was looking, you know, that's how we do our travesuras. But at the table or at the gathering of the elders, no way. You can sit there, but no running, no speaking out. Out of turn, nothing.
Yeah. What kind of travesuras?
Well, you know, a lot of stuff.
Well, what do you remember of these travesuras? Nothing, you know, the statute of limitations is over, so you don't have to worry.
Okay. Oh, you know, just like... what travesuras would be? Yeah. Maybe they weren't even travesuras, you know. Travesuras.
Aventuras.
For us, aventuras, más bien.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what, you know?
Más bien aventuras.
Yeah. What kinds of things? What kind of mischief did you get into when you were out gathering the cow patties?
Go and get the go out there and look for the watermelons. You know, watermelons don't ripe all at the very same time. You know, right. There were some, but you have to look the ones that, and we'd find out. And my dad said, "Don't cut any watermelons. It still need a week or two more before you can cut any." No, try to normal.
Okay.
And so we'd go and. We'd look at unas. He says, "I bet this is good." Yeah. So we'd cut it and break it up, and sure enough, we'd start eating. You know, those kinds of things that you know, or the corn. You know, the corn's not ready yet, so don't go cutting it. We go cut some corn to find out it wasn't ready. You know, so we'd have to hide it.
And did you ever get caught at this?
Oh yes, of course. Yeah.
And what happened when you got caught?
Well, then we got disciplined, you know.
Uh-huh.
My mother was one that didn't spare the rod, you know. She didn't. Yeah. They were very mature. They didn't know how to, you know, just act like they're hurting, you know. And she always hid in the right place, and you know, she had a belt, and you know, she would discipline us, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so it hurt more inside than what it hurt here, you know.
Yeah.
But she wouldn't let us get away with anything. Nothing. One day, I remember she spanked me. I did something. And I spanked her, and I started crying. ¿Quieres más? ¿Estás llorando? ¿Quieres más? No. Again, why are you crying? I'm crying because you don't love me. You're always hitting me. And she said, "No, I spank you because I love you." She said, "If I didn't love you, I wouldn't care. You know? I wouldn't even bother you. But because I love you, that's why I spank you." And I said, I couldn't, for many years, I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
How come she loves and spanks me?
Yeah.
Well, I know now.
Yeah.
And so, those are the things, you know, I used to.
Now, you said the grown-ups were telling stories. What do you remember of those stories?
Oh, see, there was TV in those days, too.
Right.
Like, I compare TV, you know.
Mm-hmm.
To me, 90% were made up. Were totally made up stories, you know. But they were very creative because they could make up these stories that many. And then they would. And when they were talking, and see, they always used like as examples to, how would I say, to. I'm trying to say parable, but I guess maybe it was parables, you know.
Yes.
Maybe it was. A ti te lo digo, Juana, para que lo entiendas tú, Andrea, or something like that, you know.
Uh-huh.
I'm telling you, but I wasn't here to listen, you know. I think that's what sort of like what it was, you know. And so they would use these examples. The guy that was very disrespectful to his mother, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and one day he got very mad at her because he wanted to go drink some more, and she would always give him, "Mijito, pues aquí está, there's a milk money," but you know, so. And this day she didn't have any, and so he says, I'll make you get me some, got a rock, you know. So I'm going to pegar la viejita, going to throw it at her. And when he got ready to throw it, the rock stayed in his hand, wouldn't leave, you know.
Yeah.
And it just grew there, the rock.
Yeah.
Stayed in his hand all the time, you know, from there on, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, in fact, there's a. If we have a chance before you leave, I'll show you a film that was made by one of my daughters.
Uh-huh.
In one of those stories, okay?
Okay.
And the filmmaker, because Maria Elena.
Yeah.
I was telling her the story. Her and Juanita was telling them the story about the stories that my mother told us.
Right.
You know, I was passing them to them. And Juanita said, "The writing. She's a good writer." She started taking notes and writing. And they did a script, and Maria Elena made a movie, and she's got a lot of awards already for it, you know. So, I mean, that's a little
part of
it. And so I lost my track.
We're talking about the stories.
Stories. The daughter that, if I heard this, everybody knows this story. And this girl wanted to go to a dance room. I says, no, I don't feel like you're going to a dance tonight, Mikhail. So no, I don't want you to go to a dance. Well, I'm going anyway, if you want me to leave me or not. And so she got ready, got all prettied up and went to the dance, you know. The dance was going on full blast and everything, you know. And she got there, a ratito, pretty soon here comes this really handsome guy. You could tell him, vestido, you know, 51. I mean, you could tell him about, from the crowd, you know. Really handsome guy and really well-dressed and, you know. And came out and asked her to dance, you know, so she was delighted. She started dancing, you know, and danced when all night, you know. Finally, children used to go, you know, people used to take children to the dance. And so, mira, ella tiene pata de gallo y que no, pata de burro. And he had, one was a rooster's foot, you know, but, and the other one was a donkey's. So he started thinking, no, the devil.
The devil, yeah.
El diablo. And so once he found out that he was in, then he just like, un remolino, and he took the girl and just shot straight up through the roof. And that's the less they seen the girl, you know. Yeah. About, you know, next day they found her a quarter of a mile, half a mile away. She was all destrozada, you know, toda aruñada and all that, you know. Things like that. Hijo, man, you'd sit there and, oh, it was out, you know. I mean, my mother tells me not to go, I'm not going, you know. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the way that they used to do a lot of stuff. And it was a very good way of doing it, you know.
Yeah.
Now, you, if I would try that with probably with my children, with come on, Dad, you're just imagining things. It's old fashioned, this and that, you know. We didn't. That was gospel's truth, you know. Yeah. I mean, that had to be it, you know. Like I say, times were very, very different, you know. So,
yeah.
Our times changes.
Yeah, we've changed.
We've changed.
We've changed.
Our culture has changed a lot, you know.
Did your mother tell you the La Llorona story?
Oh, yes. She heard it a million times. She heard La Llorona. Nobody told her. She heard La Llorona, you know. I mean, you know.
She heard it.
And then the thing, you know. And then we had an uncle who was a good storyteller, and I think he was the best one of all, my tia Alejandro, married to my tia Carmen.
Okay.
My uncle, by marriage. Oh, he was quite a storyteller. He was good too. And so then, like I said, they would have it at Librados today, but tomorrow it was, or maybe not tomorrow, but next week or whatever, or next 2 or 3 days, it was at my tia Carmen's. Everybody went out there, you know. And when they came to my place, they would supply the chocolate, you know, or in the corn, you know. Go get some corn, and they throw them in the. You'd throw them in the brasas, and then they would have the barbecued corn or something, you know. And then they would do the same thing over there at the other place. You would have a pie or a cookies or something, you know, or punch, or, you know. But that was it, you know. Very, very, very sane, very healthy lifestyle, you know. And so the kids learned from that, you know. I mean, you learn what you see, I think, you know. And I think we learned something from that, too. Yeah.
Okay, I think you got about 2-3 minutes to take.
Yeah, that's not much. Well, you want to run it out?
Well, it's up to you. I just noticed on the counter here I've been 43 minutes.
Yeah.
45 minutes to take.
Yeah, it should pop anytime. I was just going to keep going until it pop. I was going to ask, maybe I shouldn't start another topic, but...
yeah, because it doesn't pop. That's the problem.
This one doesn't?
Mm-hmm.
It stops.
Yeah, it just stops.
Which is...
Stop it, turn it over.
Okay.
And he slept. He slept until about 10:30, 11 o'clock, and finally made me something wrong. Jaime,
wake him up.
Are you okay? Pues corazón... Because ya van a ser, le pasan las 10:30. He couldn't believe it. He said, "Hijo, can you sleep here?" He says, "Just like this, nothing. Just what you. This is the noise that I make is the only noise that you'll hear." Aquí este no tiene chamacos. She's got. Apenas se mueve. There's a rentals here.
Mm-hmm.
The other couple over there don't have any children, you know. And so nobody's.
Yeah.
No noise around here.
Todos tranquilos, eh?
Todos tranquilos.
Yeah. Now you're talking about the stories and like La Llorona, you said they don't tell you about somebody who told them. They actually heard it.
They actually heard it, yeah.
Yeah.
See?
My wife
did. You tell that the way your mother told it?
Yeah. There's a lot of different versions. So you remember how your mother used to tell it?
Well, she told us why La Llorona, where it came from. You know. Legend goes that this lady had two children, and she got mad at the husband, or her husband went and left her, or something. Yes. Family thing. And so to get back to him, she went and took the two little children to the river and drowned them. Okay? And just drowned them there. And so now she can't rest. It's always where there's a creek or river, it's just where they hear it most, because she's looking for the lost children, for the souls of the children that she killed. That's the way I heard it, you know. And so it's very real. It's just it's very real. It's for sure, you know. And just that it does this, it's something like a howling, but almost like a howl from a coyote or wolf, but in the human tone, you know, un llanto, un sentimiento, un lloro that's. It's just spine chilling, you know. You hear it, and you just can't, because it's so deep, you know. So, and you know, and then they tell it, and they make it. You know, so, oh, you don't want to hear La Llorona nunca, you know. Yes. So, oh yeah.
If you went down to the creek at night, would La Llorona snatch you away?
No. It's just a spirit, so it doesn't. It doesn't snatch you. No, it doesn't. It's not. It's just the spirit, you know, that does that. So it can.
Well, my wife teaches second grade in Moore Park, and it's the kids from the ranchos in downtown. They're almost all from Michoacan now, but they teach. They're trying to teach them the difference between legend and myth and story, and so they use La Llorona as an example of a legend. The kids always say, "No, maestra. No es leyenda. My mama says she heard it. You know, it's not a myth. It's real. Yeah, this it's one is real. Not. It's not yeah. like these other legends. Yeah. This is real.
Now that's the way I was. Yeah. I was taught to believe you.
Now, you mentioned that the tareas, the jobs you had after school. So, where were you going to school?
That was it's still there, in fact, it's still there. My cousin that just died, she just died a few weeks ago. I put a little marker there where we went to school, you know. It's not used as a school, obviously. For years it's been used like something else. I think it's a shop, you know. Just it was a little country school, little building, no bigger than my house, you know. And it had three little small rooms. One was from kindergarten to third grade or fourth, and the other was from fourth to sixth, and the sixth and seventh on the other one. And there was no more than, I don't think there was probably 25, 30 kids all together. Yeah. And La Escuelita.
You had three teachers then for each room? Or?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She would teach kindergarten, first and second, and I'm not sure of third order, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then two or three in each one, three or four in each one.
What do you remember of a day in the three-room schoolhouse?
I like school a lot, you know, like some kids don't want to go to school. I couldn't wait for morning to come so I could go to school, you know. I wanted to learn, you know. I wanted to learn a lot, you know. And it was in those days, what I remember was that the teachers could discipline you too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, with mom's permission and dad's permission, you know. So there was no, I'm going to tell my mother, you know, no. Instead, if they get out of line, you can discipline them. So you were, what are you going to do? You know, you can't get out of line because they can hit you, you know. They can spank you. And we got spanked a few times. Like I say, you know, we weren't angels, so...
And what did you do to get spanked in school? Or what didn't you do to get spanked in school?
And it was just... one time, I remember, there were more, but I'm probably fighting with other kids or something like that. You didn't get a paddle, you know. Nothing. It was just more psychological than hurt, you know.
And the one that I remembered clearly, and then I got involved, like I was, I don't know how to explain it, but I was an innocent party to the, to the thing that happened, you know. I had two cousins, many cousins, but these two were terrible. I mean, these guys were pretty bad, you know. And so they went one day and they broke into the schoolhouse on a Sunday or something like that. I don't know how, probably easy to break in, you know. They broke in and they stole pencils, those yellow pencils. First of all, we had those green or red ones with a big old punta, you know. Yeah. You know, that's what we had. And the big yellow ones are only for the eighth graders, I think, you know, or seventh graders. The upper graders.
Primary.
Yeah, primary with puro lapis y chafa, you know. So anyway, this is, oh, everybody with a pencil like that. If you had a pencil like that, you would, that was, you had class, you know. And so those cabrones, they go and they steal about five or six packs, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, a dozen in every little pack, you know. Yeah. And they stole them, you know. They went in and they got them. And, you know, somehow they next day or whatever, you know, and they said, Rookie, this was my nickname. He said, Rookie, ¿quieres lápiz? Yeah, I said, no. No, los dio el maestro, you know. He said that they'd given to him, you know. He thought, chiquito, you believe, you know, or you want to believe or whatever. You know, you don't question too much. And, you know, they had stolen, so. And they gave not even a pack. They gave me two or three pencils, you know. I was just an innocent part to the. And then they found out, right? They found out who it was, and then they got him. So I was. They found me two or three pencils, so I was part of the. So I got some of it too, you know. But they had really were the ones that did the whole, you know. And they knew that too. So things like that, you know, or fighting, you know. They're fighting with my cousin. I'll check you on. Come on, let's get it. Let's duke it out, you know. Things like that.
Now, how many of these 30 or so students there were your parientes, though, your family? You had the lineup of the family along there, right? So.
Probably at least 60-70%.
How far away from home was the school?
The school, I tell my kids that they don't believe it. It was hard times. We used to have to go barefooted to school, you know. School. In snow, you know. Yeah. 2 feet of snow. Yeah. Uphill both ways, you know. No, it was really it wasn't that, probably half a mile, I guess, you know. Not even half a mile at tops, you know, from where we used to live to the.
So you used to walk to the school?
Yeah.
Did everybody walk? Was there a bus?
Oh, there was a bus. The guys, the people that lived, 3-4 miles away, there was a small bus, you know, just to bring them. But most of us lived right around, very close. We would walk. And, so like I say, about 30-70% were cousins, you know.
Now, when you started school, did you speak English?
No, not at all. So I used to make fun. My sister still reminds me, like, once it gave me the sign in front, you know, they still remind me. They call me Ricardo Dick sometimes. Ricardo Dick. So it was just Spanish was her language, you know, mm-hmm. His first language. And she would tell us, but it didn't. We spoke Spanish, you know. And so when I went to school, they said, okay, we have a new little boy here. What's your name? And I knew that my name was Ricardo, but she said, they're going to call you Dick in school. You know, they're going to be your new name, you know. So she cut me some. So what's your name? Ricardo, Dick, Ricardo Dick. So they started calling me Ricardo Dick for a long time. You know? And
so these were older cousins, so they've learned some English at the school already.
Yeah, well, my sister was already. Your sister, yeah, my sister Rita was. Yeah. Yeah, she's already been in school 3 years, you know. And she knows a lot, you know. She knows. Yeah. She knows. She's teaching us. Yeah.
Teaching the younger ones some English.
Some, yeah.
So, yeah. And the teachers, did they speak any Spanish?
No, I don't remember any of them. In fact, they didn't want us to speak Spanish, you know, so that's why they didn't encourage it, you know, in those days.
Did they punish you for speaking Spanish?
Not there. I don't remember getting punished because they couldn't. Everybody spoke Spanish. Even the gabachitos would speak Spanish, you know. There were some Anglo kids that spoke Spanish just as good as you and I, you know. And so
was Spanish. It's always spoken there. Just inside the classes is English. And, I don't remember ever getting punished there. I remember in Broly, later years when we were in Broly, we got punished because we were speaking Spanish. But no, not there. I don't remember. I don't think so.
Yeah. So you said you liked school.
Oh, I loved it. I really liked school. You know, I liked it a lot. You know.
What were your favorite subjects?
Math has always been my favorite. Yeah. Oh, as a mathematician from the beginning, you know. Oh, I used to love it. I was good at it, so that's my... And there were subjects I didn't like, you know, like I was good at history and very good at history.
History and social studies.
Social studies, I think, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then the one I didn't, and I, now I can, but ever since I went to school, you know, because I only went to the 8th grade, también, like César. English, you know. I didn't like that subject for some reason, you know. And I wish I would have just paid attention to that, you know. Never did take that subject seriously, you know. Now that's the only thing that of all the things that I wish I could do, I would do differently if I went back, I would be that I would study English and learn it, you know. I never did. Yeah, those fun days. It was a lot of play, you know. In the morning, we had to get to school, you know. I mean, there was no time for horsing around, you know. But in the afternoon, well, after school, it would take 2 hours to get home. We'd be playing by the canal and, you know, over the ramas, the cachanilla, and, you know, and just messing around. It took 2 hours to get home, half a mile. We'd play a lot. It was fun times, you know.
So at some point, though, you're going to leave the homestead area, right?
At some point, yes. Yeah. We have to.
When did this happen?
This happens in 1937. Let me, before we leave the homestead, let me get some more stuff in there,
sure.
Okay, more
yeah,
things
absolutely.
In there.
Absolutely, no, and I'm not trying to rush you along.
Yeah. Remember that I told you that my dad and my tío Valeriano had this pujo, mm-hmm. A couple of tables there, you know, two or three tables, I think, in a poker table or something like that. And then they used to sell, they'd sell beer. They had beer, they sell sodas and raspados and candy and things like that, you know. Well, that was part of our job, to go out and wreck balls after school, you know, we'd go out there and wreck balls. Big cousins were playing. Puro familiar, I guess, you know, they were playing, and we'd wreck the balls and everything. But we also, I guess it was on Saturday nights, you know, we'd have menudo, you know, like for Sunday morning.
Right.
And Cesar and I were in charge of selling the menudo. My mama would make it, but then they would take the big olla and then they would sell menudo, yeah, and they would start eating the menudo after they had drank, you know, ya como están cerrando, you know, the menudo goes after you've been drinking.
Right.
And so we used to sit there and guard the can, you know, but we couldn't hang, we'd go to sleep, you know, it was already 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, and we were tired and we'd just go to sleep, you know. And our uncles, pues, again, almost puros familiares, you know, familiares, they were all conocidos, you know, I mean, they were all like all family. You know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they would, the guys that were guarding the menudo, the guys would go out there and serve themselves, you know, and everything. And we woke up and the can was almost all gone or have gone. We hadn't sold anything, you know. But they would pay for it, but just to play with us, you know.
Yeah.
And then my dad, a ver, pues, ¿dónde está el dinero? You guys were selling menudo. And we didn't have any answer. We went to sleep on the job,
no
you
money,
know.
Right?
No menudo, no money. And so, you know, that's the thing. They used to play with us like that. And Cesar was a, because we were there and it was for free, you know, so he got to be a, in fact, he was always, all his life, he was a very good pool player, you know, he was very good at it, you know. So he learned real good. And there was a man there by the name of Jesus Acuña, who was a pool shark, he was really a pro, you know. And he would teach him, he would give him lessons and do this, if you want to make the ball, do that. And he'd teach him the piquetes and this and that. And he learned it, you know. I couldn't, I never had the pulse of her, but just I learned it, you know. Well, at the age of, he was about 9, 10 years old, they wanted to take him to Phoenix for a junior event, a junior tournament, you know. Jesus would say, he's good enough, Librado, he can do it, you know. Yeah. And so anyway, it never materialized. He never, you know, we left and then we didn't play
pool. Would your mother have allowed such a thing?
Probably. If it was done right, you know, yeah. She probably would have, yeah. Yeah.
If it's family-oriented.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was not, but I was, no way. If it was family things, she would have. And so, like I said, he became a very good, in later years, you know, when we were teenagers, a teenager, you know, he used to hustle, you know, to hustle, he was good, you know. And so, yeah, that was one of the things.
You know, you're talking about having the homestead, having the tiendita with the pool, you know, table and so on. What else was there in that community? I mean, is this, in effect, is your father's store, pool hall, kind of the community center?
That's it. That's nothing else.
Nothing else.
That is it, you know. Uh-huh. That is it. Yeah. The little pool hall and the tiendita. Yeah. That, nothing else. Yeah. And they're still there. The thing, the buildings are still there, you know. When I go there, I guess it's my God. But they look so small now, you know.
Yeah.
In those days, it was a big building, and it really shrunk a lot, you know. And they're still there. My goodness, nobody's tore them down. I got a lot of pictures and everything, you know, kind of like good history, recorded history. You know? And they're still there many, many years ago.
So your father, your grandfather too was involved in this? Or?
No, he had already died. See, died my grandfather died in, it must have been in 19, oh, my grandfather probably died in 25, and 24, something like that. You know? No, I'm talking about already in the 30s.
You know? The 30s, okay. Yeah. So your father then is pretty much community leader. I mean, by that, having that position, in the sense that people go to him, people go to them, the goods, the services of the pool table and so on, the menudo are there. So,
yeah. No,
so he's always talking with people.
Yeah. And then they also had some, they como digo, people had to invent their pastime. They had to invent their pastime, I guess, you know, to their whatever. So somebody came, one of the cousins, whom got a pair of big boxing gloves, and he put on a tournament, you know, duke it out, you know, and have three rounds, you know, and no ring or anything, just the people were the ring, you know, and they would go out there and duke it out, you know, and the winner would get a soda or something, and they would make their own thing, you know, and
play the game where the washers put
yes
in the ground.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Throw. I don't remember horseshoe throwing there.
No.
That's a Tejano thing, I guess. Yeah. You know, the washers and then the canica, the throwing the peseta. Those, no washers throw your peseta, and then you would gamble at the same time. You know, would be gambling. I remember that and. Cousins that had a cousin who was very good with a guitar, you know, could sing.
Yeah.
So he would entertain us. He would sing there at the pool hall, you know. Yeah. You know, he would, everybody would clap. He'd come in and sing a few songs and then go on. And it was, there was life. There was a community. There was a community center, really. That's what it was, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the way you're describing it. Mm-hmm. With the typical things that happen in small community stores like that, you extend credit to people so that they can...
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, he always said, apúntamelo, libro, para la semana que entra. Yeah. And then, like I say, he was a postmaster, you know.
Right.
The mail would come and just drop everything at my dad's store, you know. He goes, tengo carta. He would come and see. Aquí está una, aquí está otra. He was the postmaster, you know.
Yeah.
And so, that's what it was.
Yeah.
And then Yuma, like I said, is about no more than 8 miles, 7-8 miles away from this little place that I'm saying. If you had anything that you wanted, anything to buy from the hardware store, something else, you know, other than what you could get there at the little store, you'd have to go to Yuma. But a lot of people use the catalog ordering. Was very popular in those days, you know. The rural people use the catalog a lot, you know. And my sister, who was only in the third grade, she was the one that filled out the orders. She was very smart, and Rita's, you know, she's always been very smart, you know. She's only a third grader, and all my uncles and even my cousins, older cousins would come, Rita, quiero order that. Oh, yeah, she would. And later on in years, she worked for Sears in San Jose. She used to tell them a story how she worked for years and years. She retired out of Sears. Okay. But I'm talking way, way many years before she was working for Sears also, right. I guess, you know. And I didn't pay for it, yeah.
Making no orders for people,
yeah.
Right?
So she knew a lot, and everybody would come to her. She was very good at it. And yes, yeah, in 10 days, 2 weeks, you would have your material, whatever you ordered, you know. And so I remember that you would order through the catalog. And
if you want to take a break now, we can. We don't have to go to the end of the tape.
Okay.
Unless you check the watch. So.
Yeah, I was thinking, porque we want to go to have some lunch. You know?
Okay.
And so, yeah, you can, if you want to, we'll just break it off. Right?
Yes.
Okay, we had left it off.
Yes. The chime there, is that? Does that bother you?
No, that doesn't bother.
Okay.
Nice atmosphere noises, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we were up to the point where you're ready to leave the homestead, the tienda. Now, what happened? What caused that? What caused you to leave? It sounds like a very good life.
Mm-hmm. What happened there is that this is right after. Well, it was, I guess, still just at the very end of the Depression, what they used to call the Great Depression of the 30s. And they didn't. They were behind in taxes. They couldn't pay the taxes because they couldn't make any money. They couldn't. You know, nobody was doing any money, and so. The state took it over and put it up for auction, and somebody else got it, and we had to move, you know. Mm-hmm. Just that simple. We lost it because he couldn't. My father tried to, if it would have been these days, like this time, you know, this period, he could have saved it. But in those days, it was somebody else wanted it. They wanted it, and he was part of the loan committee at the bank. And my dad knew could never get. They found all kinds of reasons not to give him a loan, just to catch up on the taxes. And so he lost it. You know, it would have been different these days. It could have just would have been way different. But anyway, he lost it. We had to move. We had to give it up and move. And so I guess he figured. The best place to go to would be California, so we could, because other people would tell them about how families could work together during the summer and pick the crops and, mm-hmm. and do this and do that and make a little money and during the summer vacation, the kids were out of school, you know. We weren't thinking, in those days the families didn't think of where we're going to go, we're going to take the kids for vacation. We knew we were going to take the kids for vacation. And so we came to California. My dad actually left. We were still in school. The school in those days was, I think, in Arizona. It was like the first or second week in June that school ended. And my dad left probably, I would say, in February or March. Probably March. He came by himself to get settled in California. And he already had a nephew that was living here in Oxnard, so they said, "Oh, come over to you. I can find you a job, and you know, they need people right now." And so, my dad came by himself, and he lived with him. And in the meantime, he was working, and he was sending money home so we could. The guy was very good. The guy that bought that got the homestead. We asked him if we could keep on living there for a few months until we get. So he said, "Fine." There was no hurry to get anybody out or anything, you know. And so we stayed there, and my dad used to send money for us. And then when school ended, they didn't want to move us. They didn't want to pull us out of school. It's only 2 months left to school or three or whatever. And so my dad came to Oxnard. He was working, and he by that time he found a house to rent, our own house. And as soon as school was over, I think in about 2 days, we were on our way to California. A cousin of ours had a Model A Ford, and he said, "I'll take it. You just pay for my gas." And so we got on and started for California. And we...
What do you remember of that trip?
I remember the trip was, because everything was new. We had never left that little valley there. That's all we knew, you know. Yeah. Back to Yuma and passing Yuma, just crossing the border into California was already an adventure already, right. You know. Bard and Winter Haven were already an adventure, you know. Yeah. And then we passed through this desert, you know, like the Sahara, you know, all this, nothing but sand, you know. It was always, all of those were new. Even though we lived so close to it, we'd never been there, you know. So everything was... I think the biggest experience, the biggest, was when we saw the ocean for the first time, you know. In Santa Monica, they used to be the old road through Santa Monica, Highway 1.
Highway 1.
And you make a turn, all of a sudden, there's right in front of there's this big, big, big blue thing in there, you know. Just couldn't believe it that there was whole water, you know. And that was a very, very nice experience. Everything was new, like I say, you know, Los Angeles, you see the city, you know. And you had to drive. In those days, there were no freeways. You just drove right through the middle of Los Angeles. And all those were things, you know. We had our first encounter with you. The very first night we left, I said it was June, right? It was already hot. And it's already summer. And it gets very hot in those parts of the country. In Yuma, it gets very hot, you know. And so my cousin wanted to leave at night, you know. He says, I can drive during the cool of the night. It's better for me. So it's okay. So anyway, we got started. And you know where that checkpoint, that Border Patrol checkpoint there between, it's just past Westmoreland there on 178, you know. But it was there already, you know. And so there were two cousins, you know. The other guy had driven from Yuma, which is probably 100 miles by when we got to there, close to 100 miles. And then I'll take it from there. And they were sharing time, you know. And when they said, but we'll stop before we get to the Garita, you know. Before we get there, we will stop. Well, they were talking something. By the time they saw the lights at La Garita, you know, not too far away. So they stopped. And they turned the lights off. Was these guys come? They came like right away, you know. And they were only exchanging drivers. And they came, and then they started asking us questions. And my mother's all panicked. You know, she thought, Sustara, they thought they were going to throw us all back to Mexico right then and there. And she was just like, you know, it was just like a scene there, you know. It was just like, and says, and I were just laughing. This is fun. We're just enjoying it, you know. Yes, you don't know. You don't know the. You don't know the consequences could have happened, but yeah. You know. To us, it was now just like fun, you know. And then my cousins one of them got so nervous, he forgot his name. He didn't know what his name was. You know, just like all those kinds of things are funny. But anyway, they found out that they were weird too. They were just a family going to Oxnard. She had proceeded my letter. My mother happened to have a letter. My dad wrote, so we'll be waiting for you. So anyway, they knew we weren't contrabandistas or anything, so they let us go through.
Now, and the cousins that were in Oxnard, how long had they been there?
Not too long. They had also just gotten there. Probably, I don't know, months, a year or so.
Now, you had a set of family, you know, that also had homesteaded in that same generation. Now, are others in the family having to leave? Are they also leaving?
No, they didn't leave in the homestead. They left.
They had their own places.
They had their own places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, were they able to, you know?
No, a lot of them stayed behind.
A lot of them stayed behind.
Yeah, a lot of them stayed there. They you know, things started getting better. You know, after 1938, 1939. Yeah, by 1940, 1941, well, that was a boom. You know,
the
guerra and all that. You know, so a lot of them made money then. You know, they were able to salvage or they made money and they built good houses and you know that sort of thing. So we were just didn't quite make it.
Yeah.
You know? We just didn't make it. And no, they stayed there. A lot of others came, you know. A lot of the kids, after they grew up, they left. And, but eventually everybody, they moved to Yuma. Instead of living by the canal, you know, by the ditch over there, they started moving to Yuma, to the city, you know.
Move into town. Right.
And, but a lot of them stayed. In fact, a lot of them still over there, you know, still over there. And there's a story that maybe later on we can talk about one of these places. There's a mention that my cousin, one of my cousins, you ever heard this guy Nick Chavez that sells on TV and he sells this cosmetic, he has this cosmetic line?
I'm not familiar.
Nick Chavez?
No.
Oh, he's always on QVC.
Okay.
that sells. He's very, all the women know him, you know, like, okay. He's very famous. Well, he's our cousin now. And he happens to be like a billionaire now, you know, he's got a lot of millions of dollars. He just he just made it. He's a young guy, but he just one of those guys that just make it, you know, overnight, you know, like, seems like, you know. And his parents still live over there, which is my first cousin. His parents, my first cousin. And he built him this mansion out there in the middle of the desert. And you would, everybody thought it was a casino they were building. But it's a mansion, you know. It's just this beautiful place, you know. Like the, you know, it's a fabulous place. Fabulous place, you know, just. And it's right, I was, we were born right not too far from there. It's just about a half a mile from the homestead, you know, on the other side. And so there's still some. There's still some family there that have rooted and they stayed there and that's where they're. They've been dying there and the kids didn't stay there, but they did, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's we came. Let me come back to Oxnard.
Sure.
We're still on the trip getting to Oxnard, and like I said, you know, we by the time we got to I suspect that this was around 9 o'clock. It was already dark, 9, 10 o'clock at the most when we stopped there and we had that incident with the Border Patrol. And then they let us go. Anyway, by the time we got to Santa Monica, the sun is just, it's starting to get light. It's just starting to, you know, just starting, because we traveled all night. Those cars didn't travel over 35, 40 miles, I guess, you know, it's a little Model A's. I'm sure we never went over 45, 50 miles an hour. And see, it's starting to break it down, you know. And all of a sudden, like I said, we went over this place, and we just all this big, couldn't believe it, this big bright ocean in front of us, you know. That was really something, you know, first time you see the ocean. And that was quite an experience. And then we traveled all alongside it. It was very beautiful. Highway 1 is so, it's always been very scenic route there. And we finally got to Oxnard, and my dad was already waiting, and you know, he had a house for us to live. And we got there, and we spent the summer there, and then...
Your dad was working in what at that point?
He was doing agricultural work. He was working at the... a thresher. They used to grow a lot of beans and around
lima
that area.
Beans, right.
Lima beans, yeah. And other kinds of beans.
Yeah.
And he was working as in one of those
threshers. Yeah,
yeah, thresher. It's doing pretty good, I guess. And we weren't working then. You know, we still weren't working. So then school time came around, and we went to school. We went to Catholic school. There was somebody. It was a charity thing. You know, that school. Nobody paid to go to that school. You know, Catholic. Somebody. But I heard later on, one of the sisters told us that that somebody at some time back had died and had a lot of money, and he left it to that school so it could continue. Nobody would pay for it, you know. And continue as long as the money, it was millions of dollars, so I guess, you know, a lot of money. She said just a lot of money can go forever. And it wasn't a very, very big school, you know. It must have been, oh, I don't know, probably... 150, 200 kids, you know.
Which is a considerable change from 30 students or so.
Oh, yeah. It was a big thing. No, yeah. Everybody had their own classroom and all that, you know. And
how do you feel about that kind of a change? I mean, you're leaving the agricultural valley surrounded by a desert, going to agriculture with the ocean.
Oh, it's beautiful. Oxnard, that area is very beautiful. Yeah. You know? All that coast area is very beautiful. So we... It was all new. It was all different. Yeah. Even it's the smell, you know, the smell in the morning, the smell of the eucalyptus, you know, that was just the difference.
Breaks, yeah.
Wind breaks, and it was just some good memories there too.
Yeah.
And so we went to school there, and again, you know, I always liked school.
Yeah.
And it's when I grew up that I didn't want to go to school anymore. I couldn't really, you know. You know, and we did very good. We did very well. We had some good stories there, Cesar and I, and we were still very poor. You know, we were. That's what happened, and that we went backwards there. I'm trying to remember, why did we go backwards there for a while? When we came, or did we used to live with my tia's house? In my tia's house, I don't remember now. I said my dad had bought. Had gotten a house. No, I think we were living with Tia Carmen. No, I don't think we could afford a house still then, you know. I think we were living with Tia Carmen. I know we were, it's a house, but we were all bunched there together. So, anyway, we we went to school there one whole year. And then comes at the end of the school season, my dad said, okay, we're going to go up north and we're going to, they say families can make a lot of money up north. And, you know, we were like my sister Rita describes it very well. She calls it that we were greenhorns, you know. Mm-hmm. Getting us, we were still greenhorns. We didn't know anything. And so any place they told us to go, there was a good thing, you know. You know how the chisme runs, right. You know. Everybody, everything's a chisme. No, don't leave that. Go over there. You make all the money you want. And get no over there. So we were chasing all the big money, and it was nowhere to be found. So anyway, our first adventure was that we started off north, you know, from Oxnard, and we were going to a place called Gonzales, right there in the Salinas. Oh, in Gonzales, hay mucha piscorita. They're doing very well. The families are. It was kind of work that kids didn't, you know. That's almost row crops, you know. They don't use too many kids there, you know. Strawberries, you know. That in those days there was very few strawberries. And we got there, and they were picking peas, and it was just like 2 or 3 days, one of those things that, you know, una llamarada, they call it llamarada, you know. 2 or 3 days, it's over, and then we worked a couple of 3 days a week, I don't know, maybe at the most, and we didn't make very good because you don't make money, you know. And somebody said, no, don Lebron, váyase para pescadero, allá sí hay buen trabajo, ahí están trabajando ahorita, están piscando el chile, and they got the acelga, and they got all kinds of, oh, so there we go to Pescadero, you know, man, we went to Pescadero, and we got there, nothing of what they said was there, you know, nothing. We're lucky.
A lot of people and a little work, huh?
Not even a lot of people. There was just, no, it was just, it just wasn't true, you know, I mean, first. But anyway, there was real small truck farms, what they call truck farms. Mm-hmm. There was a Japanese family, you know. And we had no place to stay, no place to, nothing. We didn't even have a tent or anything in those days, you know. And so again, my dad went around. This Japanese family was working there, and he said, "You need any help? Anyone? Who are you? Well, it's me and my wife, and I got some kids." He said, "Yeah." I said, "Maybe for a couple of weeks. Is that okay?" "Yeah, sure." But so. We got there, and he had a little house to top it off. Not a tent, but a house, you know. Yeah. He says, "Yeah, family can live there. Everybody's living there, you know." And my mother cleaned it right away, started sweeping and cleaning cobwebs, and you know, she made it livable. You know? Yeah. And then we stayed there, and it was really beautiful there. It was really enjoyable. It was only 2 weeks. Yeah. And we used to go out there and pick eggplant in the morning, and then there was just a little truck farm. Well, that's enough many boxes, just 120. And then we go, "Now we're going to pick chili, you know, like a chili, so many boxes." And then, you know, until he got his order, I guess. But we worked a few hours. Mm-hmm. And it was very nice. And it was a creek running there, and we used to go in the creek and then walk up and down. And the ocean was not too far from there. We could almost go to the ocean walking. So it was enjoyable 2 weeks then, but it ended, you know, and there was not much more there, you know. That was it. So then somebody said, "In San Jose, don Libra, ahorita, right now, that's where it's really happening, San Jose. Está la cherry, está que se quemas, and you can, the whole family can work, you know." And we were just following whatever somebody. So anyway, we got ready to roll, and we headed for San Jose, not knowing anybody, where to go, nothing. We never do anything. We're just like, let's go see what happens. And by that time, my dad had a 1930 Studebaker. Big square tops. That thing would be worth about $100,000 right now if I had it, you know. A classic 1930 Studebaker President. Everything we owed was on that car, on top of that car, on the top, you know. That's all our possessions was there, plus the 5 kids, my mom and my dad. And let's go to San Jose. Oh, my uncle Mariano was traveling with us. He also had his little car, and he has his oldest daughter was with him, and then I had my cousin Petra and my nephew Ruben. They were four in that car, and my dad. And we traveled together. We were going everywhere. And so they told us San Jose was the place. So here we come to San Jose, and we got there. And I don't know if you've been to San Jose, where the plaza is, that Mexican Heritage. Have you been there?
Yeah.
Right there, that same area. that was right next to Alum Rock Street, King and Alum Rock, right in the corner. Well, that's where we landed, right there. There was some big eucalyptus trees. There was about three huge eucalyptus trees, you know. And the lot was vacant. It was nothing there. It was just a lot of bush there, you know, because there wasn't very much from in those days from King Road on to the east. Was very little. And so we got there, and not, you know, we got there and probably around noon, you know, and pull out the bologna and the bread and bologna sandwiches and we're going to stay tonight, you know, nothing. And so we didn't see any, didn't look like the place we were looking for into. Yeah. And finally, and we were there, and my dad went and I don't know, he went to a service station to ask, you know, where was work, and nobody knew work, who are they hiring. Finally, you know, we came back, so nobody knows anything. Yeah, un paisano was, you know, andando, you know. And then my dad said, "Hey, paisanos, you get, you see?" So saludar, entonces. Oiga, ¿dónde está el barrio mexicano? ¿Por aquí en la barrio? Pues sí, está un lugar que es en el Salsipuede, está. Pues si se va por aquí, por esta misma calle, allá anda ese Jackson, da vuelta a la mano derecha, ya le dijo cómo llegar y todo. So eran, el Salsipuede eran two little streets, you know. Mm-hmm. Tremont and Summer Streets, you know. Just two little streets with dead ends, you know. And so we got there, and yeah, sure enough, there was Mexican people living there. There was all raza there, you know. And we still had no place to stay or anything, you know. And so but my mother could. My dad said, "You can make friends with the devil if you put your mind to it." She could make friends just like that. She was that kind of a person, you know. And so we got there and parked, and everybody would look at us, and we had our mochilas arriba del carro, and everybody, and. Everybody had their houses, little modest houses, pero eran casas, you know. And we just parked there, and all the kids in south the car, you know, and it was time to eat again, so pull out the bologna and white bread again, you know. And then there was a señora regando sus matitas afuera. And then my mother got off and walked over there. La saludó y se presentó. Dice, ¿qué? ¿Dónde son? What are you doing? Well, we just came from Pescadero, and then she says, and they were looking for work, and I told her what she needed. And then she says, but we haven't found anything, and we don't have a place to stay. You mean you don't have a place for tonight? Where are the kids? Well, we don't have a place. Oh, no. You're going to be right now, just like that, you know. Just like that, doesn't it? And she happened to be, she was from Arizona, también, San Salón, paisanos, and all that. And so she said, no, mini, I think un garajito viejo, you know, just a little bed and board shack kind of thing, un garajito dirt flooring. Si quiere y si gusta, ahí pueden quedarse, que sea por esta noche hasta aquí, until you find something. And so, sí, ya dijo mamá, yeah, so, si nomás tenemos que sacar unas cajitas ahí que todo, pero ahora los voy a tirar, you know, clean it out, and regaron el piso, and clean out the cobwebs, and, you know, so you could see the daylight all over the place. It was just a little. But anyway, we had a place to stay. And she had an old bed there in una cama vieja y la puso y lo puso. No, they made a place for us to stay right away. And Doña Antonia Juarez. And so, but there were two families, and there was my uncle and his daughter, una señorita, pella grande, y luego my cousin Petra, which is a widow, and her son Ruben, and all of us five, and everything was. He said, in the house, I have a, she said, aquí en la casa tengo un rentero, somebody's living here, you know. It's a single man, he's an old man, single. And he's got a good room in the house. I'm going to ask him to move to the other room on the other side, you know, which is okay, you know, but I mean, he won't like it, but he has to, or he's going to be out of here, you know, just like that kind of. And said, como la señorita, he was here worried about la señorita, you know, ya tiene que tener some. So anyway, she asked the guy to move, he didn't want to move, he said, no se mueve, entonces se ocupe. Well, anyway, he moved. He said, va a ser por unos días nomás. And so then they fixed it. That was a real bedroom, you know. They fixed it for Petra, who's my cousin, with her little kid, and Narcisa, the señorita. And anyway, we all, by the time it got dark, we already had a place to stay, and then they found like that, just like I have right there. This way was good. There's a cook stove, you know. Yeah. They put it out there. Aquí hay tablitas, hay leña, and then we did haciendo frijoles, tortillas, and everything outside, you know, like just like that. And so we stayed there. I don't even know how long. We must have lived there for weeks, I guess, you know, weeks. And then it was too early for for some of the crops that hadn't started yet. Is what happened, you know.
Okay.
They were picking cherries, but the cherries wasn't the kids where kids could work, you know. Tall trees and way even men had to get away up there, and it wasn't. We could pick whatever was hanging, but that's all we could do, you know. And they didn't want you there because you could get hurt, you know, and climbing up the ladder without permission. Anyway, it wasn't the cherries wasn't a thing for families, but the chalacán is going to start pretty soon. Yeah. Now there's where they can use families. And sure enough, the Suel Chalacán and everything, and right just...